Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 35th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. Today is the fourth tarot storytelling segment of 2019, and there'll be one more after this, maybe two more if I decide to pull that off. There's some from last year that I would like to re-air because not all episodes that I recorded last year are still available for streaming. And part of that was just because I'm evolving a lot and, you know, I think that I've learned how to podcast better over time. And that's been kind of something I've like debated with myself, but you know, I think self-preservation is really important, and I think being open about our process and open about learning is also really important, and it's important to find the happy medium between the two. I think self-reflection and growth is invaluable, but I also think that vulnerability can be really hard and dangerous and unsafe if we're not in a safe place within ourselves, within our community, within our circles. And for me, I've been dealing with a little bit of pre-burnout feels regarding this podcast, regarding Instagram in general, which has been going on a long time with Instagram. But small business life is interesting that way. And I do feel, as a Cancer North Node, it is part of my path to be vulnerable about my process and to participate actively in the death of my own ego and continue to just show up for the collective while also keeping my own cup full. So that's kind of what is informing my work behind this podcast today. But I'm excited to share it. I think these stories are really illuminating for the ways that these individual archetypes in the cards can affect us in our lives. And there's three amazing contributors today, Sarah Gottesdiener, Diana Rose, and Flair of the Word Witch. You may have had an intense couple of days before, during, and slightly after the Pisces full moon. And for me, I know that when a full moon is in a water sign, it's the worst. The Cancer full moon that happens in Capricorn season in January is really difficult. And this Pisces full moon in September is really difficult, for me anyway. And I think it's interesting because I have been going back at times in my life and looking at the dates and what cycle the moon was in during these really difficult times, these really difficult moments that were difficult because of like emotional triggers that came up. And more often than not, it's on a full moon, and more often than not, it's in that time frame of January during the full moon in Cancer, or in September during the full moon in Pisces. I'm looking forward to the shift into Libra season. Venus and Mercury's recent transit into the sign of Libra, especially Venus being at home in Libra. I really closely identify with the sign of Libra because I'm a Libra rising, and I also have Libra and Mars, which is kind of a difficult placement, and I have Libra and Saturn and Pluto. So all kind of like my aggressor planets, my strong planets, the planets with more challenge are in Libra, which is all about beauty and balance. And that's a little bit contentious because sometimes when we have a lot of Libra in our chart, we can be so focused on being harmonious, on making people happy, on having something that's aesthetically pleasing, that we actually like won't go towards our action, which is why I'm thankful that my biggest influencers in my chart are Capricorn and Libra. But I'm excited because I'm starting up again a set of three new moon workshops that will be happening virtually online. And my awesome plant witch apprentices are going to be helping me with each one of these new moon workshops. It's pretty affordable. It's $25. It's a couple days of work. It's part individual work and part sharing with the collective, exploring plants that go along with each sign, setting the intentions for the new moon, the different astrological aspects to that new moon. So for example, for Libra, we're talking about seventh house and Venus and the tarot cards that are associated with the new moon, which would be for Libra, Justice and the suit of Swords, because Swords represent air and Libra is an air sign. If you're interested in signing up, there are a limited amount of spots. You can go to www.riseupgoodwitch.com, click on the link that says workshops, and read a little bit more about this offering. So I'm going to be doing it this new moon in Libra on the 28th, and also the new moon in Scorpio and the new moon in Sagittarius. And I'm really excited and I'm really stoked with the folks that are helping me with this too. I think we're going to create some really cool content. And some of that will also be available in the Rise Up Good Witch e-zine, which comes out a few days before the new moon and is free for patrons who pledge $5 or more per month, or it's $5.55 for download on the website. I'm proud to have this episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast sponsored by the 2020 Many Moons Lunar Planner, which is now available for pre-order. This planner is part planner, part spellbook, and part journal. Every new moon and full moon contains information, tarot pulls, and spells for each lunation. A brilliant coven of contributors makes monthly contributions, including Lathan Thomas, Mystical Mandrake Root, Edgar Fabian Frias, Grace Duong of Mystic Mondays, Mary Evans of Spirit Speak, and so many more. The planner comes with every moon and its sign for each day of 2020. There are monthly tarot spreads, plenty of space to write and reflect. The planner is chock full of original and specific original content. Make 2020 your most magical year yet with this highly anticipated cult classic publication as your guide. You'll want to pre-order to ensure that you get a copy, as this is a limited edition project. To go to modernwomen.bigcartel.com or click the link in the show notes. Sarah Gottesdiener has been such an inspiration to myself and many witches in her deep study and work with the moon cycles. So this is a great opportunity to learn more and bring work with the moon into your daily practice. If you enjoy this podcast, there are a few ways that you can support its sustainability into the new year and beyond. The first thing you can do is go to iTunes and hit subscribe and even rate and review. I've gotten a lot of really great reviews this summer, but they've kind of slowed down lately, but I'd like to share a couple of them with you. This one says, "Thank you for creating this. I'm so grateful for the existence of Karina and this podcast. It has taught me so much about tarot, social justice, plant magic, and much more. The tarot storytelling episodes are incredible, and she always brings on the best guests for the most open, informative, and important conversations. Support her on Patreon to keep this podcast going." Thank you, Jen. Another one that I wanted to read is from Jose ZPD, Divine Resource. "This podcast is fantastic for so many reasons. There are no other shows interviewing people with topics as niche and interesting as these. You're bound to take away a slice of new information from each episode. I especially love the personal tarot stories. People recount personal examples of cards and how the lessons have manifested in their lives. A new and enlightened way to interact with the tarot. Definitely worth a listen." Thank you, Jose. So I wanted to share these two because they talk about the tarot storytelling episodes, which are an offering that I'm really stoked to be able to share with you. I think it's really important for us to collaborate and think about ways that we can honor one another's perspectives, especially when we are all small business owners, we're all tarot readers with our own practice, and we're trying to survive and make a name for ourselves in this very globalized yet individualistic capitalist world. So one way for you to support the podcast is to go to iTunes and rate and review. Hit the subscribe button. You can also follow on SoundCloud. And if you have $5 a month to show your support for this podcast, plus you're interested in getting lots more content, especially these next 3 months, the Patreon is so chock full of content right now. So for $5 a month, you get a 20% discount on The Apothecary, you get a 25% discount on tarot readings, and you get regular weekly content, including a Full Moon Collective reading, you get an e-zine, and you get weekly blogs and vlogs about issues of tarot and moon cycles and herbalism and plant magic, etc. And I even have a couple of bonus podcast episodes that are available for download if you join. So you can go to www.patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch. I really want to give a shout out to everybody that's been there for a while. Y'all are the reason this podcast still can function and continue to grow. So if you want to join the Patreon community and get more access and show your love and support for this podcast, check it out. So I don't really know what the intentions of the first tarot creators were, but I think of tarot as a tool for deep self-reflection and for evolution of ourselves, and that means doing the hard work. And if you've heard the other tarot storytelling episodes, you probably know that I've really attempted to kind of put the stories together in ways that complement one another, almost so that I can put them in a theme. And I'm coming to realize most of the themes are about suffering. And of course, that goes back into the old trope of how our suffering is often our biggest inspiration. But the stories today, I think, are about illness and about struggle and about loss. And I think all three of these readers have like really strong stories, really strong presences and practices that I'm really honored to be sharing. So if you have your own tarot practice, you know, going back to what I said at the beginning of this episode, how I made a lot of the first podcast episodes private, and that goes against a lot of what I believe in when it comes to growth and vulnerability, but I also believe in self-preservation. I think that in our practices, in our witchcraft practices, we have to constantly be looking for ways to evolve and sharing our experiences of evolution. But at the same time, editing is a thing, and a thing that I'm not very good at, but editing ourselves and deciding what we want to show up for and what we want to keep just for our individual selves are things worth considering. So I really hope you get something out of the stories today, and make sure to check out the individual work of Sarah and Claire and Diana Rose. Make sure to check them out on Instagram and check out their offerings. Thank you again for tuning in.
Hello, this is Claire Burgess from the Word Witch podcast, and today I'm going to tell you a story about the Five of Swords. So once upon a time, I was married and then divorced. And during my four-year-long, really horrible marriage, I started reading my cards again for myself. And among other cards that came up a lot, like Death and the Ten of Swords and the Eight of Cups, one of the cards that appeared to me repeatedly and became my teacher was the Five of Swords. So this is the one in the Rider-Waite-Smith, Smith-Waite deck that has the smug-looking fella on a shore, on a beach. And he's holding like three swords, and there's two swords at his feet. And it looks like he's taken these swords away from two people that he just defeated. And we can tell that he's probably defeated them because they are walking away. And one of them looks pretty distraught. And they are walking away from him towards a body of water. Towards a body of water. And we're going to come back to that later. Swords are the suit that corresponds to the element of air. And air and swords are about the mind, the mental realm, about communication, about intellect and will. And in the fives, all of the fives of the minor arcana, we see conflict, challenge and conflict. And so in this card, the Five of Swords, we meet a conflict in the mind, a conflict of thoughts or of like wills, or a conflict in communication. When this card came up during my divorce, the Five of Swords was always, almost every single time, heralding some sort of invitation to engage in a shitty exchange with my soon-to-be ex-husband. The Five of Swords would come up, and then there would be a text soon after, or an email, or some passive-aggressive barb prodding me to engage. A few times, the Five of Swords showed up, and then like I would hear some sort of like gossip heard through the grapevine that he'd been saying this thing about me or that thing about what happened. And sometimes it would be face to face in the mediator's office, or when we had to file our taxes together. That was awful. And he'd make some statement about what happened from his narrative. The narrative in which he is the righteous party, the aggrieved party, you know, his narrative. And I would, in those moments, just try to remember the Five of Swords and bite my tongue and decline that invitation to get in a shitty, go-nowhere, pointless fight. So the Five of Swords, I mean, it's about shitty fights that you can't win. Or that you can win, but that will only result in a hollow victory. This card is the one that shows up when you've lost the point of the argument, but both sides keep on arguing anyway. This card is the moment when the disagreement stops being about what happened, or about principles, or about justice, or about wrongdoing, and becomes instead about wills and about winning. Winning for the sake of winning. So, I mean, did it piss me off when these things would happen? Of course it did. Of course it did. Did it make me want to put him in his place and tell him and everyone else in the world what really happened from my point of view? Of course it did. But there's the thing. My point of view. At its core, the Five of Swords is about dueling narratives, about dueling egos and wills. Remember, swords are our communication in the mental realm and will, right? Communication is also narrative. It's the story we tell ourselves about ourselves. Fives are challenge, right? So this card is where the stories clash, where the narratives collide, where communication so often breaks down into blame or self-righteousness or stubborn insistence on one thing that is, quote, true. We start to exert our wills and our narratives on the other person and only will accept defeat, right? Like ultimate victory or defeat. No compromise anymore. But here's the medicine of the Five of Swords. It's in those two swords on the ground. and in those figures walking away, going toward the water. This card invites us to disengage, to disarm, to put down our swords and go down to the water. Water is healing and cleansing. Water in the tarot speaks to emotion and intuition. Water is the heart and the source. The Five of Swords, an air card, has that water in it because it urges us to go to that. Go to the water. Let it go, it says. Walk away, it says. Who cares what some smug-faced motherfucker says or thinks? Let him have the swords, because you don't want those swords. Those swords aren't serving you anyway, not anymore. Maybe that person, maybe they'll realize that those swords are useless to them too. Maybe they'll also go down to the water and wash themselves clean, and then you can both meet again unarmed to talk. Or maybe not. And if not, you gotta be okay with it, my friends. In this card, you gotta be okay with it. You gotta be okay with walking away and letting the other person feel like they're right. You can't force anyone to the water. They have to come to the water themselves. The important part in this card is that you go to the water, that you put it all down, that you let all that shittiness wash away. The Five of Swords, this card taught me again and again that I didn't have to engage, that I didn't have to convince anyone of anything, that I didn't have to prove myself or prove my point, that I didn't have to have everybody see it the way I saw it, that sometimes we are more served by just letting that shit go and holding our own narrative and our own truth as our own. The Five of Swords got me through that divorce, friends, and it got me through it a lot more easily than it would have been otherwise. And now, this summer, I'm about to be married again. When you see this card, put down your swords. Go down to the water. That's all. Thanks for listening. This is Claire Burgess of the Word Witch Podcast. Bye.
Hi, my name is Diana Rose Harper. On Instagram, I am Damashena, and that is spelled D-D-A-M-A-S-C-E-N-A-A. My tarot story is about the Ace of Pentacles. So, back at the beginning of April, right before the Aries new moon, I decided to pull some cards about what that new moon might bring me. And the first card that I pulled was the Tower, and that's kind of a heavy card, so I decided to pull a clarifier around, you know, what kind of tower I might expect. And the second card that I pulled was the Ace of Pentacles. So I thought that it might have something to do with money, with my relationship to money. That's something that I've been working on for quite a while. But then I didn't think too much of it. And so then the next night, I was on this trip and I was having dinner with friends, and the sandwich I had ordered at dinner was one that had pesto on it. And it turns out that that pesto was made with walnuts rather than pine nuts, and I am allergic to walnuts. I've been allergic to most nuts since I was a kid, but never super severely. So once I realized I was allergic to this sandwich, I just did what I usually do, and one of my friends also gave me a Benadryl, and I just wasn't going to be worried about it. But then about an hour later, my body went into anaphylactic shock. For those who don't know, anaphylaxis is this allergic reaction where the body goes into a really intense inflammation state, and it almost always includes extreme difficulty breathing, and a lot of times it's something that will kill people. Fortunately for me, the context that I was in was one that meant I didn't die. One of my friends literally saved my life by driving me to the hospital, and the ER staff pumped me full of norepinephrine and calmed down my body. And once the anaphylactic response was over, I'm like lying there in the ER in observation and just cracking up because I was remembering the cards I'd pulled the day before, the Tower and the Ace of Pentacles. Because there I was in the aftermath of a physical tower moment, right? My entire body had been shaken to the core. And I was in that tower moment because of a nut, also known as a seed, also known as the Ace of Pentacles. So it was really harrowing, right? It was not a pleasurable experience by any stretch of the imagination. But it really changed how I think about tarot and also how I think about the Ace of Pentacles specifically. I'm not someone who does a lot of really intense fortune telling with my tarot. I like to think of it in terms of archetype and inner exploration of inner landscapes and the creation of greater agency and, you know, walking through shadow work and things like that. But the cards I'd pulled had been materially predictive. I had a physical experience that was very clearly found in the archetypes of the cards that I had pulled. And then those archetypes too, right? Where it's like the Tower is a shakeup, you know, that's like inarguable. But the Ace of Pentacles is frequently thought of as this like new beginning. It's like this exciting potential and seeing what's going to grow and what's going to manifest in your life. But having this experience was one that helped me to kind of think a little bit more clearly around the intentions we have around the seeds that we're planting. Not every seed is worth planting. Some seeds will actually be bad for us if we let them grow. I think a little bit about like invasive plant species, for example, which just, you know, take over landscapes and end up, you know, ruining really complex biodiverse ecosystems. And in our lives, like metaphorically speaking, we also have to be careful about what we're allowing to take over our gardens. So now when like the Ace of Pentacles comes up for me or for clients or whatever, it's like there's this additional backdrop, like this additional dimension to the Ace of Pentacles where it's like, are you sure you want to plant that seed? You know, do you have a sense that you want to tend to that particular plant in the long term? Is it one that if you decide later you don't want in your garden, you'll actually be able to remove with some level of ease? And, you know, bringing intention to what we plant actually makes what we plant more magical. So that initiation moment of literally almost dying has also brought me into a more clear space when it comes to the life that I want to continue to cultivate.
Hello, my name is Sarah Faith Gottesdiener, and I'm a designer, artist, tarot reader, and business owner living in Los Angeles. I'm also the co-creator and co-host, along with Amanda Yates Garcia and Carolyn Penny Packer Riggs, of the Tarot and Magical podcast called Strange Magic that you can tune into wherever you listen to your podcasts. I wanted to talk about the major arcana card, the Chariot, for my bit of storytelling. I am a number 7, which corresponds to key 7 in the major arcana, the Chariot. I identify incredibly with this archetype. To be honest, even if I wasn't a Chariot as my soul card, I would probably work with this card as a patron saint or an aspirational archetype, or to add some magical boost to my spells, like I do with other cards in the tarot, such as the Queen of Swords, the 9 of Pentacles, the 3 of Cups, and the Empress. The Chariot is a card about becoming a master of your own self through change. And in doing so, becomes a master of change. The Charioteer is a channeler. She accesses spirit and messages from the cosmos to deliver messages and work in a way that in turn creates movement, makes movements, and also causes ripples of change in those who are witnessing the work. The Charioteer wants to achieve. And for so many of us who have been socialized as feminine, ambition and achievement are both very bad words. The reasons why the Charioteer wants to achieve are important. She wishes to share her ideas and her energy with others. She listens and works with cosmic energy and keeps it moving. She delivers it to the masses. She also wishes to become her best self and wants to go far beyond where she has been. The Charioteer understands that it is through movement, through challenges, through change, that we begin this work. It is the journey that grants us evolution. The Charioteer doesn't get too bound up in absolutes. She likes to keep it moving. She deals with bumps in the roads, with potholes, and with dealing with a chariot that doesn't want to move. The Chariot is her protection. The Chariot is what she takes with her. The Chariot is her boundaries. The Chariot is her home. There can also be themes of health with the Chariot card, and particularly in the last 10, 13 years, my health has been an issue. In a very Chariot fashion, I've been in several serious car accidents, a couple that were actually near death, that have left me now in serious chronic pain. I also have a genetic mutation in the leukemia family. My bones are scarring, and in about 4 to 5 years, I will undergo a bone marrow transplant, which is the only known cure for my rare disease. In the meantime, I move forward in serious pain, literally feeling my bones scar and crumble in my body, literally dealing with joint pain, muscle pain, all of the things that are symptoms of my disease. I move forward in Chariot fashion using my will, my ambition, as well as communing with and utilizing spirit to guide me in order to progress and move forward. In 2018, last year, I experienced my Chariot year. I was a Chariot in a Chariot year, and I was really excited. Of course, as with happens in the tarot a lot of the themes of the Chariot popped up in my life. I had a lot of big muggle accomplishments. My business did the best it has ever done. Coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, it was also in its 7th year, its Chariot year. I had more than one pretty big professional accomplishment, and the love of my life and myself bought a house in Los Angeles. Like the Charioteer, I had put in the work, harnessed my energy, worked with channeling the cosmos, and listened to my intuition, and I had gone far. But of course, when we work with the archetypes, when we allow the archetypes to show up in our lives, when we embody them, we have lessons to learn. The shadow side of the archetype will show up as well. The challenging aspects come up to let us know what we need to integrate and where we need to evolve. And sometimes that can be painful or really hard. The Chariot is one of the first of the majors, where the shadow side of the card itself shows up visually in the majority of traditional tarot decks. In the drawing by Pamela Coleman Smith, the shadow of the chariot is shown in part by the dark sphinx, or both of the sphinxes, really, and the armor that the charioteer is wearing. When that shadow is ignored, when the body is ignored, when we close ourselves off to help or receiving support, when we don't pay attention to the shadow side of ambition or control, the controlling stop at nothing to achieve aspects of this archetype can come up and create an imbalance that ultimately can be really harmful to the charioteer's mission of evolution, forward momentum, and freedom. And so the shadow side of the chariot swept into my life. A medical procedure gone wrong left me unable to use my right hand for a month, which was my dominant hand, leaving a major project I had been excited about doing, barely finished, and done with a number of mistakes and imperfections. I'm still in pain from that, and I'm dealing with that today. Ignoring my chronic fatigue and some of my chronic health issues that are byproducts of my leukemia left me in a state of adrenal fatigue as I closed out my chariot year. I am still focusing on recovering my health and on trying to heal my adrenal fatigue. And also, another thing that sometimes will happen with this card and the shadow side, the brave charioteer needing to do it all on her own, then ends up becoming isolated and alone. I felt like I couldn't share any of my very human experiences because on the outside, everything was going so well. Everything looked so wonderful. I felt like I couldn't let people know how sick I was, how exhausted I was, because then they would know that I was vulnerable. I was worried that people would think that I was not capable. That can be the shadow side of the chariot. So here I was, having made some very big chariot-like strides, but unable to actually enjoy them as a result of my chariot-like behavior. It is so amazing how much the archetype had come through in all of its ways for me last year. The energy of the chariot works best when it is in alignment with itself. When it is moving at the pace that takes into account its own goals, its own evolution, its own path. Capitalism can push us to be in a frantic hustle mode, pushing our bodies, our energy, our chariots beyond their bandwidths. The charioteer does best when she is competing only with herself, when she is working to bring her ideas and emotions out into form in a way that makes sense to her and her vision, not what others expect out of her. When the charioteer has the perfect ingredients of will, intuition, energy, boundaries, movement, and aligned action in her corner, she is able to navigate the winding roads with ease. When she is communing with spirit, allowed to be vulnerable, and allowed to take breaks, the charioteer is truly victorious and able to enjoy those victories. I learned all this and more during my chariot year. Thank you to Karina for asking me to take part of your project. I am so in awe of everything you do and you create. I am super honored and humbled to be thought of. Thank you so much, Karina. I love you.
Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review in iTunes and check out www.riseupgoodwitch.com for more information about tarot readings and the apothecary.